we're firing on all cylinders, I guess. You know, it's been a, you know, an amazing, you know, mineralized zone to work with.
Terry Lynch, Power Nickel, good morning to you. How are you, my friend?
I'm good, Andy. How about yourself?
Doing well. Let's start out here. You had Power Nickel and yourself have had quite a run in 24. Let's reflect a little on that going back. Tell us or recap the wins.
Yeah.
Talk about the direction. Go ahead.
Obviously, a great year in 2024. Top performing mining stock in Canada, number three in the world. So can't complain with that. It all started really in January. We started to follow up our drilling on the Lion Zone. And, had the discovery hole had been 8 meters of, 1 ounce PGMs. And that was exciting enough. And then we drilled the 16 holes between sort of mid-January to the end of April, hit on 15 of 16 of them. And, probably half of them were like 10 meters of 10% copper equivalent or better. And so, of course, the thing blew up because that's ridiculous. It was insane. And, in mining and in life, I think it's always better to be lucky than good, and we were extraordinarily lucky. I mean, we did the right thing scientifically to get to drill there. It was a target. We drilled it purposefully. But God had a special treasure there for us, So we thank him for that gift, and we've been thanking him ever since, really. And so, obviously that when you have that type of spectacular drilling success, you attract thought leaders, both in the geological world and also in the money world. So we were able to obviously attract that, and we brought Dr. Steve Beresford, who really sort of helped us transition from, a nickel sulfide discovery to understanding what a polymetallic discovery is and how one might, attack that and discover that. He had come from, he had been chief geologist at First Quantum and then MMG and IGO, and obviously probably spent more money exploring for polymetallic successfully over the last 25 years than anyone alive. So he brought, a certain mindset, skill set, and team to the table that we could learn from and boy, as we went forward. So that's been a big part of what happened later in the year. And then of course, we were able to raise capital from some of the smartest mining guys on the planet, like Robert Friedland led the last round. We raised $20 million or so Canadian, and he took half, and Rob McKeown took 20%, and then three mining funds took the balance. So we had, smart mining guys writing big checks, and that helped a lot, of course, as well, so they gave us, good perspective. We can reach out to these guys for tips and for, hey, what do you think about this? And they say, well, that's a good idea. This is a bad idea. That type of thing, which is, very, very helpful. And then after we raised the capital, then we sort of, did some, I would say, more strategic, almost researchy type stuff. In terms of, ground EM and then more geophysics and a lot more stuff like that to help us. And this is stuff that Steve felt would be very useful to guide the research program going forward. And then we adopted a sort of one of our key, I guess, exploration tactics, the use of extensive downhole EM. So when we're drilling a hole now, we always follow it up with a downhole EM. So it turns that 6-inch hole from a 6-inch hole to like a 200-meter hole, because in deposits that are magnetic, like the polymetallic deposit that we have, the sulfide deposits, they'll show up, you'll have a magnetic response. And so that gives you an indication that you're still on this plate that you're drilling, right? So that's, continuing to expand us. And we're really sort of, probably by the end of the year, we started to gather that data in a way that'll allow us to, I think, as we go forward in 2025, to have bigger step outs and to grow the resource faster than we did in 2024, which is obviously still very good. But I think analysts suggest now that we have 9 million tons at 7% copper equivalent. Yeah, it's an analyst number. We post all of our drill collars at Azimuth so that analysts or amateur geologists or anybody that understands LeapFrog or that type of software can model it themselves and come up with their own interpretation of what they think the current mineralized zone area is. We, you know, people ask us, you know, will we put out a forestry 101 this year on the line zone? And the answer to that is no. Just that we're growing rapidly with the drill bit, and we'll post all of, continue to post all the collars out there and deliver the info people need to, you know, generate models and stuff. It's just that, you know, probably I would think H1 of the following year would be a likely target for that, because it's just growing so rapidly. It doesn't make sense to lock us into that pigeonhole at the moment. And Great Bear did this, you know, several other companies have done this. This is not an unusual tactic for the sector. So I think it's an interesting way to go at it. And you know, that's our plan. And so, you know, the fall of the year, sort of from October 15th to December 15th, we, I think we drilled something in the neighborhood of 16,000 meters, 15,000 meters in that range. So we've got 14 holes coming from an assay perspective, and that'll start tomorrow, actually. So Tuesday the 21st will be our first assay from that, and then we'll, you know, I would expect probably at least half of those are going to be hits and solid to great hits, and we'll expand the zone significantly. So I think we'll get off to an exciting start in the first quarter of the year, and then where the drill bits are turning now, and got I think two rigs going. Now we've got one and the second one starting this week, and then we expect we'll add a third rig sometime around mid-February, and we've got I would say six open faces that we continue to advance drilling on, you know, where we've got existing success, and we can continue to push it either westward or eastward or south at depth. So you know, we're firing on all cylinders, I guess. You know, it's been a, you know, an amazing, you know, mineralized zone to work with. It's just been there, and it's a, having never worked a polymetallic deposit before, it's been interesting to sort of see how responsive it is to some of these techniques. You know, mostly I've been a gold explorer or you know, and it's doesn't respond to this type of stuff. It's much more structural and it's much more difficult, I'd say. But this, you know, while they're extremely rare, when you do find them, I think they're very approachable scientifically to ramp them up. So we're quite excited about what 25 will bring. And I've been quoted as saying as good as 2024 was, and we were, you know, went from 20 cents to over a dollar. We expect 2025 to be better. So that, I mean, it's a bold statement, you know, and I'm obviously the largest shareholder, and you know, people should take that into consideration that I'm drinking my own Kool-Aid, but you know, it's based on, you know, if you look at us and you compare us with you know, some of the new comparables we have in our deck and stuff like that, and you can see you know, some of these, you know, copper companies that are trading at, you know, well north of $1 billion, and you know, with 25 million tons of 2.5% copper, I mean, I think like that amount of copper in the ground, we could get there by the end of April. You know what I mean? So it's like, you know, that's where we're going, I think. And the more we prove up the value in the ground, eventually we believe the stock will respond, you know? And so, that's our objective.
Yeah. Well said. Several questions on what you just pulled out of there. Can you real quick for all of our listeners talk about polymetallic? And this is somewhat rhetorical to me, but I just want to put that out there for any new listener. That are
That's a great question, and we get that question a lot. All it simply means is that when you have a polymetallic deposit, no one mineral is going to have more than 50% of the revenue stream. So in our case, we would expect that our overall mineralized area here, ultimately hopefully a deposit, would become a, you know, probably a third nickel revenue, a third copper revenue, and probably a third noble metals. So noble metals would be the platinum group elements plus gold and silver. So it gives you a really great hedge. And the reason why polymetallic mines are literally the best mines in the world and the most valuable mines is because they have this natural built-in hedge. You know, so that's, you know, that's the definition of polymetallic.
Got it. My second question is, when we last talked, and I was not a shareholder yet, and I was concerned just because you guys had such a great run in 24. And my question was like, why? I mean, I missed it. That was what I more or less said to you. And you sent something to me is like, well, the best is yet to come. Really, if you could work that out as much as you can. I know you went into some specifics in the quarter, but
yeah. So I think that at the end of the day, in real mining, you get paid for the size and the grade of your deposit. Okay. So as our drill bit continues to flush out, the size of the deposit and the grade of the deposit, the numbers continue to rise potentially, you know, in terms of putting the math together. So
it's layers.
It's strictly the math, you know, we're adding more tons and the grade's maintaining and the metal in the ground continues to rise. So when you sort of, basically just, do any sort of, arm waving around and looking, where we're drilling and do the math in between, our successful hits. Again, in mining, you never know until it's proven and locked in. So I'll put that out there as a caveat. There's always, Mother Earth's this crafty devil and she fools us most of the time. But in this case, the math looks like it's going to be pretty compelling. So when I speak about our, prospects for 2025, it's because of the math prospects of simply the size dimensions on the mineralized zone growing, grade being maintained, and the tons ultimately as we tuck them in and we drill them up and confirm them will be confirmed. So that's what that's where the optimism comes from.
Got it. Now talk a little bit about your team and for all of your listeners. Just so you know, I met Terry in person. This was last fall, early winter. It was in October. And I was very impressed with Terry. Terry, you have never heard me say that. Really was impressed with just, you're very charismatic and you're this larger than life figure in the mining world, if you would. But what I really liked was your team and the people you got on your team, as well as, so talk about that, as well as, I also really like that you are the largest shareholder of the company. So you're protecting yourself when it comes to raising capital in the capital markets. So I like that, as well as he already talked a little bit about it, but the people that you attracted to invest in you. So talk to me about the team, which is you really got to bet on the horse. You already talked about the property, but talk about the team and then talk about the insiders, what percentages they have, and just
sure,
work that
sure.
for me.
Sure. Sure. So let's talk about the exploration team. So basically, we appointed Joe Campbell as VP of Exploration. So Joe comes to us as a well-known figure to us. He's been working with the project really since inception. He is president of a company called GeoVector. So GeoVector is, there's probably two or three top geological consulting firms in the country, in Canada. And so GeoVector is one of those. And so what they represented to us as a company when we started using them was that when you're a little nanocap explorer, which is what we were at the time, it's very difficult to recruit, good professionals just because the competition's tough. Tough to attract them. You don't have the capital base, so forth. But we were fortunate in that we were able to, begin working with these guys and develop a relationship. And so what they brought to the table is they have a big team, so they could get to the site and oversee the drill rigs and the on the spot drilling tactics and stuff like that. And then at the time we had a great geo, his name is Ken Williamson, who had been another consultant advisor to us. And then he came in house and he helped to guide the initial drill programs and we had great success with Ken and the team, worked really well. And what Joe brings to the table is Joe's done a lot of, he's taken, mines through into production, the mindset of adding that and continuing to scale the team. He also, he was trained at, I'm trying to remember the name of the, he eventually got to Western Mining. he was at Noranda, pardon me, first, and then he went to Western Mining. And at Western Mining, that's where he really sort of shone and brought a significant sulfur gold project into project in that Agnico now owns. And Steve Beresford, the guy who joined us from First Quantum and MMG and IGO, he also was a Western Mining trained chap. And so at the Western Mining, for those that, this is not a name you hear anymore because it got absorbed by BHP, but Western Mining was the great Australian, almost like the equivalent of Inco, really, in Australia. So it was, one of these, really great Aussie companies that, had tremendous, mining acumen, and they approached mining and exploration and development in what we would call the right way, I guess. And so that approach, inadvertently to me was being used at the Lion Zone. I didn't know because, that wasn't my skill set, but the team was storing the data, collecting the data, approaching the exploration in that way. And so, and when Steve came to the table, it was funny, when he came over in April as a consultant, just to help us, to advise us, as I just wanted to get his thought leadership and let's see how we could, learn from this guy. And then, he'd come up to the site and, one of the first things he sees is commodity boulders. And I'm like, I'd never heard of a commodity boulder, so he gets
sounds
on the phone.
Good.
he gets on the phone with me and he's excited. He says, "Terry, there's commodity boulders up there." And I'm saying, "Well, that sounds like a good thing, Steve."
Right.
All right. What is it? He tells me, I guess it's the world's sort of oldest lava. So it's very rare. These boulders are super rare. And generally when they're, when they're at surface like this, it's a super good sign that you got a massive nickel sulfide zone. So like all these polymetallic deposits that are nickel ore bodies, the nickel sulfide is somewhere deeper in the system and it acts as the oven. And then some sort of hydrothermal action comes by, they don't really know, that picks up the copper sulfide, brings that up to the surface, and they all precipitate at different spots along the way. And then if it's trapped between two big faults, that's what gives you this high concentration, this crazy, crazy numbers. And that happens in these polymetallics all over the world. Happened in Norilsk, it happened in Voisey Bay, happens in Sakati, so in Jinchuan, all this stuff. So Steve's whole philosophy is that to be successful in polymetallic exploration, you got to find these chutes. Is what happens is these chutes are super rich. And he says, they come in clusters. So we've got, right now we've got the Lion Zone, one chute. He says, we're going to find other chutes. In his mind, we'll find other chutes, unless it's a one of a kind thing. But he says, historically, and all the other, polymetallics, and there's not like the big ones, there's maybe 25 of them in the history of the world. It's not a lot. He says, there are always several chutes. Some will be, in this case, copper focused. Some will be PGE focused. Some will be noble metals focused. Some will be zinc focused. And he says, always you find these chutes and then you follow them down and you're eventually going to find the source. Because at the source, unless it's been eroded away, by some sort of movement or whatever, it's going to be this giant nickel sulfide body. So it's interesting. He's got and in our deck, we have a slide where we have a triangle where we show nickel on the left, copper on the right, and PGEs or noble metals on the top. And he looks at all the, the various, polymetallic discoveries in the history of the world, and they sort of fit in that triangle. The biggest one, of course, is Norilsk, which is the only $1 trillion mine in the history of the world. It's a Russian mine, famous Russian mine. People remember, sort of know what I think best as a nickel mine. It's also in palladium, but it's the world's biggest producer of nickel and palladium, but it's also the world's number four copper mine. People don't know that. It's produces 20 million ounces. It's produced 20 million ounces of gold. Yeah. It's 15 KP minerals. Isn't that crazy? And what blew me away, Steve told us, we were at an offsite with the team, and I had no idea. He said, do you know that 90% of the $1.4 trillion in the ground that Norilsk has is basically in 1 square kilometer? Mind blowing. Think about that. And you know how easy it would be to miss 1 square kilometer,
right,
in exploration. It'd just be, so imagine that, like the world's the most, successful mine in the history of the world. The 90% of it's in 1 square kilometer. So the crazy part is NISK has got grades as good or better than Norilsk. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now we haven't found our 1 square kilometer,
right,
for that. And it looks like our deposit is different. So our deposit has definitely been squashed and over a larger area. So we're probably averaging, Joe was telling me the other day, sort of in the 20 plus meters is the average thickness right now for us. So that's very mineable width, right? We're good that way, but it's spread over, a larger area. So that's what we're showing right now with these drill bits. I think we're like 550 meters by about 600 meters deep. And over the next, 6 weeks, we'll show some major expansion, east and west in that and at depth. So I think that's what's exciting is that there's that the nickel mine that started this, the nickel mineralized area that started this, was Nisk, Maine. And that was 5.5 kilometers to the south, west of the Lion Zone. And now we're drilling down toward it and still hitting Pater, Steve's theory is that most likely this thing is connected subsurface, it can probably even extend further, into the, northeast. So it's potentially already a very sizable area, but it potentially could be a massively sized area. And so that's what gives us the asymmetric upside, right? Is that we believe, if you looked at the math of what we've already discovered, that compared to our peers, we're trading at maybe 20 cents on the dollar. So there is that potential when people realize, really actually get this, that valuation gap should shrink. And then it's like, wow, but they can probably find a whole lot more. That's the thing here is that I think we've just touched the surface of this thing. And, we're at, let's say 9 million tons of copper sulfide right now. The analysts are saying we've got, about 8 of nickel. So that's 17. I mean, I think this thing could, easily this year get triple that and look like it's going to go to 100, plus. So now that's optimistic me thinking, so I'm not guaranteeing that, but I'm saying it's got the bones, it really does. So, and the key thing from an investor perspective is you're not paying for it. Your business proposition should be, hey, is he right about this comparable stuff? Does that make sense? And they should look at that math. And if they do and do their homework, they'll find that, yeah, we are right about that comparable stuff. And that this makes it a very good value proposition as it exists today. And then on the exploration side, well, it's hard to argue with the success we've had and with the way these ore bodies are. And the interesting point that Steve made, on that triangle curve as he was going through it, is that if you looked at those 25, polymetallic deposits all over the history of the world, if you find 1 ton of copper sulfide historically, and it ranges from 2 to 7, but you'll find on average of 5 tons of nickel sulfide. So if we've got 9 of copper now, which the analyst says, well, we've only got 8 million tons of nickel. So that means there's at least, maybe there's a minimum somewhere to 18 to 72 million tons of nickel sulfide to be fine, probably at depth. And this is why the key to success is to drill down the polymetallic ore bodies that you're going to pay you to get to at depth. And Steve's feeling is that given how rich the Lion Zone is, he feels like Nisk Main is just on the fringe, or maybe it's another satellite deposit. And then we haven't really found the nickel sulfide that actually created Lion. Now he said, hey, it's entirely possible that it's got eroded away, it somehow shifted away or something. But he says the beast that created that would have been very rich. So you're not talking like 1% nickel. It'll be like a 2% nickel plus 2% copper plus, that, because in order to feed that Lion Zone, it would have had it been rich. So yeah, it's interesting. So, I mean, that's all arm waving and speculation, but the historical comparables are there that are not inaccurate. And that's what, again, from an asymmetric side of things, you're not paying for that. Isn't it wonderful to have that upside? So that's all we're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. Really just a paraphrase for all of our listeners, and Terry, please correct me if I'm wrong, is right now, basically the stock price, and that's what people are most interested in, is really reflecting of what you have right now and taking that potentially into production. But really what the upside is the future, because there's so much more potentially, and it's a high potential that is more than likely there.
Yeah. And I think, what I would say is that, I think what we found now, people haven't fully realized. And yeah, because we were basically an independent, we financed the steel ourselves, right? We didn't have the bank support. So what happens is we probably, we don't have a ton of institutional ownership. That's going to come. So there's going to be revaluation as we move from retail to institution, and who see this as they're going to look at other institutional investments they've made, do the math and say, well, these guys have got a lot more metal in the ground. They're in a safe jurisdiction. It's near surface. It's mm-hmm. off the road. You know, it's in Quebec where you get 2-for-1 expiration, you get 2-for-1 development. It's like, what's not to love about the potential to develop this project? And they're trading at a massive discount. So I think there's that's going to get corrected in this. I think we're pushing hard this quarter with the news we've got, and I'm out there, you know, I actually get on the plane tomorrow and I'm off for 3 weeks on the road, basically to Europe and Asia and Australia, telling the story, getting people to be aware of this, you know, and what we've done and what we're doing. And I think that gap's going to shrink. So that's the first move. And then the second move is that if we continue to have exploration success, well, obviously this, you know, mineralized area will continue to grow and the value in the ground will continue to grow. So that's the 1-2 punch, if you would.
Yeah, excellent. Terry Lynch, people want to know more about you. Can you give the website and where your corporate presentation is at and give your ticker symbols?
Sure. So it's powernickel.com, and the ticker symbol is PNPN in Canada, PNPNF in the United States. And I'll give you a little heads up here. We're going to be changing the name from Power Nickel to Power Metallic, and to better reflect the nature of the ore body, that being, you know, and that'll happen after our spin out. We've announced the spin out. It's going to close January 31 as the target date, and so shortly after that, we'll announce a name change to Power Metallic. Symbols will stay the same, so nothing will change that way. Still same symbol, but it'll better reflect the coming focus on the polymetallic nature of the discovery we've made.
Well, Seth, happy travels to you and safe travels to you. And yeah, get the word out.
we're going to do it. We're going to do it. Thanks so much, Andy. Have a great day.
Appreciate your time. Thank you.
Cheers. Bye.